Cole and Jimmy slept in blood that night. Several times Cole would awake, feel the pain in his leg, the cold wetness of blood in his boot, and remember the shooting. The darkness of the night was complete. No moon, a clouded sky blotting out even the stars. It was as if he had been dropped down a deep hole in the earth, and it was a fearful place to be. Cole managed to shake the shroud of dread and bring himself fully awake. He rolled a shuck and smoked it. The rasping breath of Jimmy Wildbird told Cole that Jimmy was still alive. He wouldn't be for long if Cole didn't find some help. Cole knew the wound Jimmy had suffered to his elbow, if left untreated, would turn to gangrene, and the poisoned blood would flow to his heart, and that would be the end of him. Cole had seen it happen before, during the war. He took a deep draw on the shuck, then heard a sound, and realized it was coming from the cabin, and that it was human. Cole shook Jimmy awake, clamping his hand over Jimmy's mouth as he did.
There's someone still in the cabin. Don't talk, but stay alert if you can. I'm going down to take a look.
Cole felt the fever of Jimmy's flesh against his palm. The poison was already starting to gather itself in his blood. Cole's leg was stiff and hurt like there was a wedge of cold steel driven into it. But he could walk well enough, and he made his way to the cabin, sensing every step, feeling his way, holding his every breath. He got close, saw the frame of greasy yellow light in the window, and his heart quickened. The wailing sound that had caught his attention had stopped. The cabin was now as silent as the night. He saw the women through the window, one lying on the bed, the other sitting next to her, holding her hand. The cabin's light played far enough out into the yard that Cole could see that the horses in the corral were gone. He saw the boots of a man sticking out from behind a counter at the opposite end of the room, the toes pointing skyward. The woman sitting up looked at Cole when he walked in.
Oh, sweet Jesus!
Cole quickly checked behind the counter, saw the dead man, half his face blown away. Then he saw that the woman lying on the bed had a crimson flower of blood staining her bodice just above the heart.
Who are you?
John Henry Cole. Are you hurt?
Oh, I thought you were one of them come back.
I ain't.
They killed Mr. St. John in pleasure.
She looked at the woman on the bed.
When did they leave? Which direction did they go?
She shook her head.
Sometime earlier, I don't know.
I have a friend bad shot, out in the woods. I could use your help getting him.
She wasn't an unattractive woman, but Cole could see that whatever years she'd spent on the frontier had been hard ones for her. She looked at him with a gaze that was resigned, as though she'd seen what was waiting for her at the end of the line and had accepted it.
Too much killing.
I won't disagree with you.
She lowered her gaze, then took the woman's limp hand she'd been holding and placed it across the dead woman's waist and stood up. The dead woman was younger, pretty, peaceful in repose. Her friend brushed away strands of hair that had come loose and hung in reddish tendrils about her face like winter-scarred ivy.
The Indians wanted to cut my throat. The white man wanted to cut out my tongue so I wouldn't tell on them.
Cole saw a shawl hanging on a door peg and put it around her shoulders.
I could use your help getting my friend.
Cole found a lantern and lit it, and they went out and found Jimmy in the woods, and together managed to get him back to the cabin.
If you'll strip off his clothes and tend to his wounds, I'll take your friends outside and bury them.
She didn't say anything for a long time, then began to strip off Jimmy's clothes. Cole carried out the cabin's dead and laid them next to the body of Joe Digger. Then he found the dead Indian boy in the privy and carried him out and laid him next to the other three. He smoked a shuck and caught his wind, then went and found a shovel and dug graves until the light dawned gray in the east and his shirt was soaked with sweat. He rolled the bodies into the graves and smoked another shuck before finishing the task of burying them. When he finished and went inside the cabin, the woman had Jimmy lying beneath clean sheets. A pan of bloody water rested on a night table. Bloody rags lay piled on the floor. Cole found a chair and sat at the table, and the woman brought a pot of coffee she had boiling on the stove and set two tin cups on the table and filled them and took a seat across from him.
You look done in.
Yep.
Cole watched her as he drank his coffee, and she watched him. She had eyes as blue as worn denim. Cole could see the bruises on her cheek and along her neck. Some looked like bite marks. He tried not to think what the renegades had put her through. Maybe her friend was the lucky one. She wouldn't have to remember. She wouldn't have to forget.
They were my family.
I'm sorry.
For what? You didn't kill them.
You know of any doctors nearby?
She shook her head.
Might be one or two in Tulsa. But Tulsa's a 2-day ride from here. I doubt your friend will make it 2 days. He's burning up with fever.
Cole noticed the zinc tub in the corner.
We'll fill that with cold water. Put him in it. It might break the fever.
He'll surely die.
He surely will if we do nothing.
I've seen all the dead men I want to.
You'll see one more if we don't break his fever.
Cole hauled water in buckets from a nearby well that ran deep and cold and filled the zinc tub. They lifted Jimmy Wildbird and sank him to his armpits in it. He shook like a sick dog, but they held him down until he stopped shaking. He gritted his teeth and his eyes rolled up white in his head. They fed him whiskey with a spoon and rubbed a pumice stone over him until his flesh looked raw and the water itself turned warm from his fever. Then they hauled him out and dried him and wrapped him in blankets and placed him back in the bed. It was exhausting labor, and Cole soon found himself dozing in the chair, and the woman made a pallet on the floor.
Why don't you lie down and get some sleep?
Cole looked at her.
If you can't trust me by now, you might as well shoot me.
He laid down and closed his eyes and could feel his senses being snatched away. How long he slept altogether, he couldn't say. At some point, he had awakened to see the woman kneeling over him, washing his leg with cool water and wrapping it with a clean white bandage. Her hands were like balm. Now the low-lying sun made the shadows long, splaying them out across the land, and he could see swallows darting through the trees, black and swift against the silver sky. The woman sat on the edge of the porch, her elbows resting on her knees. She turned when Cole came out.
Thank you for what you did.
What choice did I have?
You want to tell me about it? What those men did to you and your friend?
She looked at Cole from the corner of her eye as he sat next to her.
No, I don't want to talk about it. I learned a long time ago to trust men to act like dogs, given the opportunity.
Why didn't they hurt you?
Her hard-eyed stare softened. She shook her head.
There was this one, just a boy, who stopped them.
Then you were lucky.
He told them he had a vision that whatever they did to me would be done to them.
Indians are big on bad medicine.
She nodded.
They were pretty well drunk at the time and had been talking among themselves. It seemed to have an effect on them. Except for the white man, who wanted to cut me anyway. But the others wouldn't let him after that boy told them about the vision.
They believe in spirits and a hereafter.
I never used to. But maybe I do now, a little. I think maybe I believe in those things, too.
Why'd they kill your friends?
Mr. St. John told them that Pleasure and I don't do business on Sundays. One of them walked up and shot him. Pleasure was an accident. A stray bullet came through the window. She lived through what they'd done to her. Only to die like that.
It occurred to Cole that maybe it had been his bullet that had killed the woman, and the thought cut him inside like sharp glass. They sat there for a time in the gloaming light.
Will you take me away from here?
We have no horses.
Well, I guess I'll walk.
Where?
It doesn't matter.
You'd be taking a big risk. A woman alone, on foot. Stay for a time until I can figure something out.
My whole life's been one big risk, Mr. Cole. I reckon if I'm not dead by now, nothing out there is going to kill me. The swallows. We always like to sit here and listen to them.
She lowered her face to her hands and wept. They squatted in a cave and listened to water drip in the dark bowels of stone and were restless with fear and confusion.
They got the drop on us, Pierce! You told us that judge in Fort Smith wouldn't send deputies down on us! Hell, we ain't even committed any crimes against white folks!
Caddo's features were knotted with his own brand of fear and uncertainty, knowing that this young wolf was constantly on the prowl to attack him, make him look weak in the eyes of the others. His eyes shone wetly in the small light from the fire they'd built on the floor of the cave. Caddo knew he couldn't show them any weakness or they would attack, led by Billy Starr. He also knew he'd have to kill the boy, Red Snake, before it was all said and done. Red Snake saw drawings on the walls that looked like riders on horses turned upside down, like buffalo running, like a rain of arrows, like a floating serpent. He had heard about such drawings from his grandfather, who told him that the ancient ones had lived in caves and had painted their stories on the walls, and that such places were as sacred as the places where the dead were buried.
Well, what about this, Pierce? How come those deputies come after us?
How the hell am I supposed to know? Maybe they wasn't deputies. Maybe the judge done gone and violated the law.
This answer didn't appease Billy. He drew his pistol and aimed it at the face of Caddo Pierce.
Get down on your knees, Caddo. I'm gonna shoot you.
The drawings seemed to move beneath the flickering light, and the sound of water dripping in the darkness made the boy certain that they were in a sacred place.
We are in the mouth of the first woman, the Great Mother, ready to be swallowed if we are not careful.
Billy Starr turned, aiming his pistol at him.
Shut the hell up!
But by this time, Red Snake had given himself over to his visions and knew that whatever would be, and that neither his will nor anyone else's could change matters. That his death or his life was not in any one of their hands. That if Billy Starr pulled the trigger, then that is what the higher power had willed.
This is a sacred place. Can't you feel the breath of the Great Mother?
Billy turned and fired into the long darkness where the sound of dripping water came from. Three more shots flashed from his gun, creating a brightness that was as quick and hot as lightning. Then the ricocheting sound evaporated to silence, and in the blackness, it was as though the Great Mother had swallowed Billy's bullets, and still the water dripped like unwelcome rain.
You see, Billy, you have no power in this place.
Billy placed the end of his pistol's barrel against the temple of the boy and thumbed back the hammer.
I have the power to blow out your brains. I have the power to kill you dead.
Yes, you can kill me. But can you kill the flight of the birds? Or the dreams of the dead?
The boy saw a look of uncertainty come into the eyes of Billy Starr as he slowly lowered his pistol.
God damn all this crazy talk! Shut up!
Pierce pulled his own pistol and aimed it at Billy.
There's no way those deputies are legal. Now, you want to shoot Max, get to it. Otherwise, don't ever pull a damn pistol on me again, Billy!
Caddo could see Billy was unnerved by the crazy talk of Red Snake and by staring down the long lonesome of a pistol barrel.
Oh, shit, and double shit. What are we gonna do now?
Let me think, will you, goddammit? I'll come up with something.
That night, while the others slept curled near the fire, with their hands pressed between their knees like lost and abandoned children, Red Snake sat at the mouth of the cave and called silently on the spirits to give him a sign. He closed his eyes and went deeply into his spirit and came back again. And when he opened his eyes, he saw a fire in the sky that burned up the stars and caused the moon to fall beyond the trees. The next morning, Caddo revealed his plan.
I have an idea that'll take care of this business once and for all.
What is it?
We'll double back on them, catch them with their jaws down, and we'll kill every damn one of them.
That's your plan?
We'll track them down and kill them all, just like we did with the Indian police and the Light Horse. The last thing they'll expect is for us to double back on them.
Those white deputies ain't no chicken shit Indian police.
No, listen. We don't just hunt them down and kill them. We cut off the goddamn heads and send them back to Judge Parker in Fort Smith. Send him the heads. His deputies see that. They won't a one of them dare cross the river to come looking for us.
What kind of crazy shit is that?
Nobody's ever thumbed their nose at Judge Parker. And those goddamn deputies see the heads we'll send them. They'll all be scared shitless.
Yeah, maybe it'll just make them goddamn mad.
No, they ain't no different than anybody else.
What do you boys think?
Billy turned to Red Snake and Charlie Fast Elk, who had been silent as stone since the shootout. Charlie nodded from his spot on the far side of the cave.
I'm for it, Billy.
Red Snake?
The boy didn't say anything. He already knew the answer. Billy turned to face Caddo there in the dancing flames that scored the older man's features in shadow and light.
We don't even know how many there are.
It don't matter. Last thing they'll be expecting is for us to turn the tables on them. Besides, I know we shot a couple of them sons of bitches. I seen them go down. So we track them down and cut off their heads.
Sure. Why not?
The boy smiled. There were forces at work none but he knew about, that none could control. They were as children being guided by the invisible hand of the Great Mother. She would lead them to slaughter and anoint their heads with blood. And when last he looked, the light of the sun had crept into the cave and crawled along the walls and shone brightly on the blood-red figures of upside-down riders, buffalo running, a rain of arrows, and floating serpents.
We'll kill them all!
We'll goddamn kill everyone!
And cut off their heads!
Billy grinned like a demon the boy had seen once in his dreams.
I ask you, spirits, please prepare a place for me.
The boy silently began to sing his death song. He must prepare for what awaited them. The things he had witnessed in the burning sky the night the stars caught fire and the moon fell to earth.
Come, we will take you in and let you dwell among us. The leathery wings of death will enfold you.
Caddo squatted on his haunches, sure he was going to have to kill Billy the first chance he got. He was getting way too aggressive toward him, and if he didn't watch it, Billy would slip up in the middle of the night and slit his throat. Caddo would have killed him then and there as soon as he turned his back, but he needed every one of them until they could find those deputies and finish them off. It was puzzling to him how those deputies had got to be on their trail to start with. Until killing St. John, they had been careful about not breaking any laws for which Parker could send his men after them. Caddo was too weary even to begin trying to figure out where they'd slipped up. Besides, he had his mind on a bank up in Kansas he planned to rob just as soon as they could find those deputies. First the lawmen, then Billy, and he might just as well kill that stupid Charlie and that crazy kid Red Snake while he was in a killing mood.
Next time you form yourself a gang, Caddo, make sure it ain't got no damn Indians and half-breeds in it.
Hey, Caddo, Charlie and me are gonna go check the horses, maybe try to scout up a rabbit or something.
Good idea.
As soon as they were out of earshot, Billy turned to Charlie.
We finished them deputies? I'm gonna kill that old man.
Charlie looked back toward the cave.
You're going to start your own gang?
Yeah. You want to be in it?
Sure. What about Red Snake?
Billy glanced over his shoulder to make sure Caddo hadn't sauntered out of the cave to check on them.
We kill him too.
Charlie's eyes narrowed.
He's got white blood in him, remember?
Kill all the white bloods. Every one of them.
The woman awakened John Henry Cole.
Mr. Cole, someone's coming.
Cole raised from the pallet, stiff and ungainly, and hobbled to the window. The brave new light of dawn splayed out across the eastern horizon, and there, riding directly out of the bloody sun, was a man upon a wagon being pulled by a pair of mules. A whirl of dust rose behind the wagon and settled to earth again, golden and vaporous like a gilded cloud.
It's a peddler of some sort.
Oh, thank God, maybe we're saved.
Cole brushed his hair under his hat and stepped outside. The air was clear and guileless. Across the road from the dugout, wildflowers peeked from the grass like red and yellow butterflies come to rest. The new day felt bracing, and the coming wagon did seem like a form of salvation, if they were to have salvation at all. The woman brought out a tin cup of coffee and handed it to Cole.
What do you think?
This is a hard land, full of hard types, and it wouldn't do to let our guard down.
As the wagon drew nearer, she turned to him.
Why, he's an old colored man.
People get old on the frontier, it's because they're smarter and more canny than the rest of us.
I couldn't care less how he got to be old. All I care about is that he's got a wagon that can take us to Tulsa.
The man halted his team of mules just shy of what gallery there was in front of the dugout. It was then Cole recognized him. He was the same man Jimmy, Digger, and Cole had run into before. The one who told them about the Mexican.
Saw crows a mile back. Lots of them. Figured something bad happened to see that many crows all at once.
Hester slipped inside to check on Jimmy.
Got somebody sick?
Shot.
The old man nodded his head as though he already knew.
Bad place to get shot in. Way out here.
Your mules look thirsty.
He looked at the well.
Help yourself.
Thank you.
Cole watched as he drove the mules to the water trough and stopped. The old man hopped down as the mules lowered their muzzles and drank, their velvety ears twitching in the morning air. He walked up to Cole on the porch.
Hey, I remember you. We met a few days ago. You ever find Mr. Juarez?
Nope, not yet.
I see them graves is fresh.
We had some trouble.
Just as I figured. You don't see that many crows together, there ain't trouble someplace nearby.
I had a friend who believed the same thing. You a coffee drinker?
I am.
Come on inside.
He followed Cole in, removing his hat as he did. He saw Jimmy lying on the bed in the corner but didn't comment, and instead took up a seat at the table. Cole poured him a cup of coffee. He drank some of it and looked at Cole with luminous eyes. His skin was as dark as polished walnut. The woman brought them some corn cakes she'd baked in a pan, and the three sat and ate them and drank the coffee in nearly complete silence. The man looked over at Jimmy, then quickly looked away as though he ought not to have looked in the first place.
No chance you're a doctor.
He shook his head.
None whatsoever. I know how to doctor my mules and myself, but only if we ain't been shot.
We'll need your help getting out of here, mister.
Well, how you mean?
I mean we need you to take us in your wagon to Tulsa.
Tulsa?
We've got no horses.
No horses?
He looked around, taking in the room.
Well, this here's a mighty fancy place so far out in the middle of nothingness.
Fancy?
Got a right nice bar, tables, chairs. Even got a privy outside and a corral and tool shed. Why, you even got books on a shelf.
We don't have time to chat about what a fancy place this is or isn't. We need to get to Tulsa. That man lying on the bed is dying.
Yes, and I can tell that by the sound of him.
Then you'll take us?
I'm a trader, ma'am. Not a teamster. I trades things.
The woman shook her head disgustedly.
What's your offer, Mr. Pepper?
Well, Mr. Cole, thing is, I'm near 70. And I see promise in this place. I see where a man was to own this corner of the world, he might could do all right for himself. What with it being situated at a crossroads like it is.
You want to trade, is that it?
He nodded.
Trade you that wagon and my mules for the whole shebang.
Why the hell would you want it?
He looked at her with mild disapproval in his wet brown eyes.
The way I see it, a man has to take his opportunity when he sees it. And this sure enough looks like opportunity to me. Well, what's the name of this town?
Town? This ain't no damn town. It's just a whorehouse without whores. A saloon with nobody to drink in it. It's a damn house of death is what it is.
Greasy Junction is what they call it.
He smiled at that, as though that suited him.
We got a deal?
Cole looked at the woman.
Your call. I reckon you've inherited it.
Keys above the liquor shelf. Just give me time to pack my things.
The two men watched as she went to the back room.
Can I buy you a drink, Mr. Cole?
George stood and went behind the bar and looked at the bottles of liquor that hadn't already been drunk or shot to pieces.
You sure you don't want to just haul us into Tulsa?
No, sir.
You still keep that scattergun under your wagon seat?
He nodded.
Then you better go and get it and keep it handy under the bar there.
He looked at Cole with an understanding that comes from living and surviving a long time in a territory that held no bragging rights to longevity.
I'll do it.
Then maybe you could help me empty out the contents of your wagon and make a pallet for my friend there to ride on.
You ain't wanting the goods in the back of the wagon?
No, sir, you keep them. Maybe start yourself up a dry goods store to go along with this whoreless whorehouse. We just need the wagon and your mules.
I guess fortune has smiled on me.
I wouldn't be so certain, Mr. Pepper. There's four graves outside in case you've forgotten.
Liable to be some more. But if there is, I'll be the one doing the dictating on who gets buried.
They prepared a pallet in the wagon and loaded the woman's one steamer trunk, then carried Jimmy out and placed him inside. Jimmy's badge fell out of his coat pocket as they were lifting him in. Cole picked it up, wiped a smear of blood off it, then handed it to George Pepper.
You might as well appoint yourself as law, judge, and jury like a fellow I know did down in Texas. Might make any killing you have to do seem legal.
His dark face beamed with pleasure.
Yes, sir. I believe you right. What's a newborn town without no law?
He pinned the badge to his shirt as Hester and Cole climbed onto the wagon. He was still waving as they drove off, Jimmy in the back, the woman on the seat next to Cole.
That old man's crazy as a mud hen.
Maybe.
Why don't you snap those reins and get these mules moving a bit faster? I'd like to get to Tulsa sooner rather than later.
We go any faster, we'll rattle that man in the back to death.
She glanced back, then brushed a sprig of hair from her forehead.
I was a fool to ever leave my home in Ohio. I had a mother and a father and three sisters. I had men who would have married me if I'd let them.
Yeah, I reckon we've all left things we sooner or later come to regret.
Some of us more than others.
Don't be hard on yourself. In my book, a fool is someone who makes mistakes but won't admit it. You're no fool, Hester.
She had a wistful look in her eyes, like she was remembering all the missed opportunities. The men who didn't stick around. The ones she could have married and didn't. The children she never had. Her fading beauty.
I was pretty once. Damn pretty.
I believe you.
Was a time I could have had any boy in Dark County I wanted.
Things might have turned out differently had you stayed. But that doesn't necessarily mean better.
Well, what would you know about it?
Plenty, Hester. I don't know of anyone who's lived the life they thought they ought to, do you?
She stared straight ahead.
I had a wife and son once.
You leave them somewhere behind?
Yes, in a grave in Missouri.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear.
It was a long time ago.
Still.
You can have everything you want, and it can be taken from you in a heartbeat. What we do doesn't matter sometimes.
But sometimes it does. And we end up paying for it, no matter what we do, the rest of our lives.
Well, I won't disagree with you. Just meant to say that it's not always our doing, the bad things that happen to us. What counts is what we do after the bad things have happened.
You sound like a preacher.
Far from it.
A voice called to Anna in the night, but when she went to the door, no one was there. Moonlight lay in the yard like a thin silver blanket, and a rush of wind flowed through the trees and caused their leaves to quake. The voice sounded as though it came from beyond the grave, for it was unearthly, and spoke to her.
I flow from you like a river flows from the great water and empties into nothingness. I am the lost child, the forever being of your blood.
This she did not understand, but something seemed to etch itself in her bones and in her blood until she felt a vibrancy she'd only felt once before, and it caused her to remember the child they had taken from her at birth. Secretly, in her heart, she had called the boy Thomas, but it was all she had to connect her to the infant. A single name she kept locked in her heart like a precious stone.
Thomas.
The gusting wind rattled out of the trees and across the yard, blowing before it loose leaves that did a tumbling dance in the pewter light.
Thomas.
But no one answered, and her heart beat faintly against her breast. There was only wind and moonlight and darkness, the thump of her heart and the madness that lies embedded in loss. She closed the door and lit a lamp and turned up the wick until the room filled with warm yellow light. She stoked the fire she kept burning in the stove and set a pot of coffee on to brew. She paced the room. She could feel the child there between her legs, the weight of it bearing on her, struggling to be free of her womb. The hands of Rudina helping it from her. The light played on Rudina's face, her brow glistening with sweat as she bent to the task of birthing the child. She remembered the rain that night, how it drummed against the roof and drove itself against the windows, a cold October rain that had in it a certain dark sorrow, as if foretelling the child's future, the shame that would accompany both of them, woman and child, mother and son. She had laid tortured on the bed, never crying out as Rudina labored to bring the infant forth, and the smoldering in her loins was like fire, a consuming blaze of heat that would forever mark them, mother and son. She sat now at the table, the tin cup of bitter dark coffee warming between her hands, and tried not to remember it, when her father came and took the child, and later, when she had awakened to a gray light, the air cool and heavy after the all-night rain, the sound of thunder still reminiscent in her dreams. Her arms were empty, the bundle of bloody swaddling clothes near a metal pan of pink-tinged water. But remember she did. The room was empty and frail. Only Rudina was there, dozing in a chair by her bed, coming awake when she asked about the child.
Who's taken him?
Rudina's eyes were full of empty weariness. And later, when her father had entered the room, his face dark and twisted as a mesquite stump.
It is finished. The child is dead. This will be forgotten, and there will be no talk of this from now on.
Then he had turned and walked out again. She sipped the coffee and tried not to think of the infant in that season of her regret. It had all been so long ago that she was barely sure that the event had actually occurred. It was like a dream within a dream. It was like something she had made up or had wished for. But in truth, she knew the reality. And all these years she'd believed that the child had died. But the wind this night had come and told her a different story, and it troubled her greatly. Her father had sent her away to a boarding school in Pennsylvania, where she'd learned Latin and other things that stole her spirit as she lay in a small room each night until the loneliness of it felt like the weight of rocks on her chest. This lasted until her father considered she had learned enough about propriety and other matters of the heart, until she had forgotten the white man. Her exile lasted until she had forgotten the issue of blood and quivering flesh and the single cry as the infant took its first breath, then was taken from her. She stayed until dawn, sitting at the table, drinking coffee, and trying to make sense of it all.
Maybe I should have said something to him. Maybe I should have told him there was a child who was born of night and blood, whose shame and sin were not his own, whose fate was little known beyond the lies her father had spoken.
She rested her face in her hands.
Thomas. Thomas.
John Henry Cole, Hester Price, and Jimmy Wildbird arrived in Tulsa late the second day, under a blood-red sun that reflected itself in the windows along the east side of the street.
I remember the town's best doctor kept an office over a harness shop.
They went there first. Climbing the outside stairs, Cole saw a note tacked on the door.
Out on errand, be back soon. Doc's out on an errand. Do you know anyone else?
There's a man given to the practice of medicine on horses and whores. His name is Clarence Bellringer.
Where would we find him?
Well, if he's not yet dead from alcohol, or the bullet of a jealous husband, we'll most likely find him at Huang Yu's opium den. Clarence is a dope fiend, among other things.
Great. I'm sure Jimmy Wildbird will be happy to learn he's about to be treated by a dope fiend horse doctor. Point the way.
There was a small Chinese section on Tulsa's outskirts, and they drove there and stopped in front of a false-fronted building that had ducks hanging by their feet in the window.
I'll go in with you. Huang Yu knows me.
Yeah, no need.
There is, unless you speak Mandarin.
You do?
Enough to make myself understood.
You continue to surprise me, Hester.
Hester spoke to the Chinaman, and he gestured for them to follow. He led them down a trap door to an underground room that was pungent and dim. Smoke drifted in and out of the flames of lit candles. Lying on pallets were men in various states of stupor. The old man led them to a solitary individual, lying in a corner on a straw mat, his face turned to the wall. The celestial kneeled and poked the man on the pallet. The man turned over and looked at the visitors through the haze of opium smoke.
Clarence, it's me, Hester.
The celestial held the light up close to her face.
Oh, it's you, Hester.
We need your help, Clarence. We got a man that's been shot, and probably will die if someone don't help him quick.
The man eased himself to a sitting position, leaned on one elbow, and looked at Cole.
Who's this?
This is John Henry Cole.
Oh, yeah.
They helped him up and to climb the stairs, and finally to step out into the twilight.
Glorious.
The man stood there, looking around, patting his pockets as though he were looking for something he'd lost.
What's glorious?
Damned if I know. Where's the patient?
They showed him Jimmy in the back of the wagon.
Bring him to my place.
They pulled up to a fine brick home that sat at the very edge of town, between the town proper and the Chinese district. Cole looked at Hester as he hauled back on the reins.
This way.
Clarence's daddy was a big-time doctor back east, in case you're wondering.
Clarence led them to a room that had a table for the patient to lie on and a cabinet full of surgical instruments and whiskey bottles filled to various levels. Clarence washed his hands and face in a pan of water, then dried them with a towel.
Can you hold one of these oil lamps close to the patient so I can see the damage?
Cole picked up the lamp and held it while Clarence examined Jimmy's arm, then the flesh wound in his side, and straightened and shook his head.
Arm's gonna have to come off.
Jimmy shook his head.
No, it ain't.
Then you'll die a not too pleasant death.
I'm not going to let you take my arm off.
Suit yourself.
Clarence turned his back on Jimmy.
Anybody for a drink?
Without waiting for a vote, he went to the medicine cabinet, selected one of the bottles, and began filling drinking glasses. When he finished, he handed one each to Hester and Cole.
Raise him up so he can drink.
Cole raised Jimmy up.
I'm not a drinking man.
You will be by the time this is all over. You folks ate?
No, we haven't.
Clarence left the room, and in a moment they could hear a bell being rung, followed by a conversation that sounded like it was in Mandarin. Then Clarence re-entered the room.
My girl will fix us some supper.
What about him?
Cole nodded toward Jimmy.
You heard the man. He doesn't want to lose his arm. I respect a man's wishes. It's his choice.
It's a damn foolish choice.
I'd like it if he was to remove me from this hard table. I don't mind dying so much, but not lying on a table like a side of beef.
They helped him into one of the guest rooms that Clarence showed them. It was a fancy room with a Brussels carpet, a four-poster bed, wine-red velvet drapes, and three or four paintings of young girls in white dresses with dogs curled at their feet.
He can die in here. He wouldn't be the first.
Good God, Clarence, do you have to be so morbid?
Dying's just one more transition in this travail we call life. Nothing to get so worked up over, Hester. He knows he's going to die if he keeps that arm, and we know it. No sense pussyfooting around the issue.
She shook her head.
Leave me alone with him to get him settled.
Clarence and Cole went out to a large room with a polished table that looked like it could seat Custer's army.
Take any seat you want. We won't be having extra guests join us tonight.
Do you ever?
No. Cigar?
He went to a teakwood sideboard that had figures carved into the legs and took from it a box of cigars and offered Cole one. Then he poured them another drink and sat at the head of the table and dipped the end of his cigar in his liquor before putting it in his mouth.
brandy and cigars. Just one of my weaknesses. I have several.
Cole looked around the room.
Being poor isn't one of them.
A curse, to be sure.
How is it a curse to be rich?
When a man has much, little is required of him. My family has always had much, and has always given me much. As a result, Mr. Cole, not much has ever been required of me. Thus it was I quit medical school and came west as an adventure. It is here where I was seduced by dope and harlots, and here where I chose to stay. The greater the depravity, the greater the attraction. Such pursuits don't leave much time for accomplishments of a higher order. My father would have had me become a bona fide physician like himself. I fell far short of his goals for me. So you see, in my case, wealth has been a sort of a curse.
I know a lot of men who wouldn't mind being cursed if this is what it means.
Would you be among them?
I'd have to think about it some.
An honest answer.
Can I ask, if your father is so disappointed in you, why has he given you all this?
As a reminder that he is still the father, and I the needful son. For you see, Mr. Cole, even unmitigated failure does not sever the blood ties. I am his shame, his burden, his cross to bear, and he bears it well. Without me, his charitable work would be diminished by half. So you see, in a rather perverse way, everyone benefits. We all, in the end, get what we want, and we all know to be careful of what we want, for we may just get it. More brandy?
Esther entered the room.
Mr. Cole? Jimmy wants to talk to you privately.
Cole entered the room and pulled up a chair.
I'm not going to make it.
You would if you'd let that man take off your arm.
I won't. I'd just as soon be dead as be half a man.
Knew lots of men who lost an arm or a leg in the war. It didn't make any of them half of what they were.
You don't understand.
I understand you'll take your damn pride to the grave with you.
He looked shrunken there in the bed, his features wan. Cole could see the fight had gone out of him, the eyes resigned to whatever awaited him beyond this life.
I want you to go back and tell Anna.
Tell her what?
That I died.
That's something I don't want you to put on me.
Why not? Seems only right she should hear it from you.
What's that supposed to mean?
I know about you and Anna. I've known for a long time. Her daddy told me before I married her that she loved a white man. A deputy marshal from Fort Smith. He even told me her name.
Oh, that was a long time back. There's nothing between us now.
You don't need to shake my tree, John Henry. I saw the way you two looked at each other that day you and Digger rode up.
You're wrong.
Tell me I'm wrong that she called your name in her sleep the night before we left.
Look, Jimmy,
I'm not up to goddamn debating.
I'm not going back to tell your wife you died because of your goddamn pride. Get somebody else.
Why'd you come in the first place?
Because Parker asked me to.
Bullshit.
I think what you want.
You came because you found out it had something to do with Anna.
Cole wished he was any place but sitting in that room with the husband of the woman he loved.
I ain't jealous no more. I was for a long time. Anna and me are of the same blood. Indian blood. You're a white man. What do you expect me to feel?
What's color got to do with it?
Everything. Nothing.
What the hell you want from me? To say I'm sorry for loving her before you came along?
His face was knotted in pain that came from more than just his wounds.
Just go back and tell her I loved her. And I'm sorry I couldn't love her as much as she needed.
It's not my place to say such things.
Cole looked toward the heavy drapes, the fancy wallpaper, his eyes flinching.
Did you know she has a child?
Cole's temples began to throb.
Not our child, but one she had before I married her.
What are you trying to tell me?
She was only with one other man before she met me, as far as I know.
Cole could feel the heat of revelation racing through his blood like bad whiskey.
No, that's not possible.
Why not? Are you saying that you were never with her?
The memory of their intimacy that last day in the hotel flashed in Cole's mind like a tintype reflecting the sun.
The child was yours, John Henry Cole.
Cole shook his head.
You're lying.
Jimmy nodded, bringing his reddened gaze around to rest on Cole.
Why would I lie about a goddamn thing like that? About a thing that brought her untold shame and heartbreak? About a thing that she would never speak of with me, her goddamn husband? Tell me why I'd lie about something like that, John Henry.
Cole felt a knife of pain stab deep enough to pierce his soul.
Tell me about it.
The night the baby was born, Anna's father came and took the baby. Old man never did reveal what he did with it, but he told Anna the baby had died. I heard later it wasn't true, that the baby hadn't died.
Cole could hear his blood banging in his ears.
That old man was a son of a bitch for what he'd done to Anna. And maybe I've been a son of a bitch too for not telling her what I heard later on. Her old man got goddamn good and drunk one day and fell from a wagon. And the wheels rode over his neck and killed him. And it was a fitting death. Now my turn's come around. But I ain't going to go to the grave carrying this secret.
How do you know the rumor is true? That the baby didn't die, that maybe the old man didn't take it out and smother it?
Jimmy shook his head.
I don't know, for sure. And I never really wanted to find out. I didn't want it to get between Anna and me. I figured, all that time gone by, it could only bring her more heartache to find out that maybe the child was still alive.
Cole was angry and hurt and feeling as helpless as he ever had. He wondered why Anna had never told him that she was pregnant. But then he remembered that after he'd left the Nations, he was on the drift for a long time, and there was no way she could have told him, except for when he had returned that afternoon, there in the house when they'd almost made love. She could have told him then, but she didn't.
What I heard was, the old man gave that child to the woman he used to carry on with. She was his housekeeper. I heard the woman took the baby and went away.
Where?
I don't know. I never pursued it. Didn't want to pursue it. Now, if you don't mind, get the hell out of here and leave me to settle the rest of my affairs. Ask Hester to come in and bring me a pencil and some paper. I want to write out my will.
Jimmy looked away toward the wall. His conversation with Cole was over. Cole walked out to the large room.
Hester? Jimmy wants to talk to you about his will.
Then he went out onto the gallery and stood there in the cool night air and took in deep breaths and tried to get his thoughts in order. The news of the child rippled through his blood like an undercurrent so deep it felt like he was drowning in it. He walked back in the house, down the hall, and into the room where Hester was sitting next to Jimmy's bed, writing down his words on a ledger.
Just one question.
Jimmy looked up, his eyes cold.
It was a boy.
Later, Clarence found John Henry Cole drunk in the yard.
We could go to Huang Yu's dope den if you really want to forget whatever your problems are, Mr. Cole.
Nothing's gonna make me forget what I know, Doc.
I understand perfectly. I've been trying for years to erase the memory of my existence, and nothing's worked so far. But when I'm at Huang Yu's, I come mighty close to a blue heaven where nothing really much matters. Not even the truth of what sad and pitiful creatures we've become.
You see, Doc, I don't want to forget. The truth is my burden, and I have to carry it.
You poor, miserable son of a bitch. I guess we've all got our crosses to carry. My dear old daddy. Me. You, that stubborn Indian, Hester, every last one of us.
He stood there, looking up at the first star of the night.
It's like he's watching us. Like he's watching to see what sort of mayhem and misery we'll cause each other next. Has he forgotten that he made us in his own image? And if we are craven, then so is he.
Leave me alone, Doc. Go in there and sit with Jimmy Wildbird and preach over him and offer him your dope and pull the sheet over him when he's gone. Then come and tell me about it.
You're a hard man, Cole.
But the hardness Clarence perceived in Cole had been shattered, like glass against stone, by the revelation of the child. And Cole could do little more than try and drink away his miserable heart and call silently to the woman who had suffered for the two of them. He had promised Anna he would help Jimmy. And now, Jimmy was as good as dead. And it seemed to Cole, and maybe it would seem to Anna too, that Cole had let him die. Cole would have to go back and tell her that he'd failed. And she'd have always to wonder about Cole. And Cole would have always to wonder about himself. Yes, with Jimmy dead, Anna was free. But that's not the way Cole wanted it. Still, with the turn of events, knowing Anna had had Cole's child, Cole wasn't sure he was sorry Jimmy was out of the way. He drank until the blackness took him. 2 days after Cole and Hester left Greasy Junction, 4 riders came. 3 Indians and 1 white man. George knew who they were the minute he laid eyes on them. But they had caught him unawares, for he was just coming from the privy with an issue of the Police Gazette in his hands, and his thoughts were elsewhere when the 4 rode up. They set their horses and looked him over good.
Say there, Darky, you got any customers inside what got bullet holes in them?
George shook his head.
What's this look like? A hospital?
The white man stood in his stirrups and looked around at the others.
He thinks we're fooling around here.
Charlie Fastell took out his pistol and shot George in the foot.
You better get to telling us about them goddamn sons of bitches pretty quick, you old fool, or I'll shoot your other foot and then shoot out your goddamn eyes.
Caddo took his lariat, undid it, and made a loop, then tossed it so the loop landed over George. Then he pulled the rope up short and the loop tightened around George Pepper's ankles.
You want me to drag you off through the scrub?
George Pepper had little choice but to obey.
The 2 men and a woman took my wagon and went to Tulsa. We made a trade.
What kind of wagon was it?
It was a big blue wagon with my name painted on the sides.
Shit.
Then Charlie Fast Elk shot him through the chest. The boy, Red Snake, watched the black man lying there on his back, his arms flung outward, his eyes half open. As the man lay there, his eyes shifted and came to rest on the boy's. Red Snake saw the peaceful wonderment of the old man's eyes and envied him his dying.
I know, old man. I know you are going to that place where the water is sweet and the sky is always blue and antelope are as plentiful as grass. I will go there too, very soon.
Let's get our asses in the wind.
They rode off toward Tulsa, their hearts full of murder.